This is the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast, helping you run your restaurant better.
Welcome back to the Restaurant Technology Guys. Thank you all out there for joining us. It's such a pleasure every single time we get on the mic and get to talk to you guys about the things that are happening in the worlds of restaurants. As we've been doing the last 18 months or so, definitely just myself from the Restaurant Technology Guys side. But as it's been kind of fun, and I know I talk about this often, it's been fun to meet different new people. Some on the restaurant operations side, some on the restaurant management side, and some on the restaurant technology side. And today is no different. Today we are joined by Thomas Flaherty. Thomas, how's it going today, man?
Doing very well. Thanks for having me.
And I have your title as the Chief Development Officer for Buffalo Wings and Rings. And for the longtime listeners and those that that are regular listeners of the podcast, you guys know that we had somebody else, William from Buffalo Wings and Rings, on the podcast a little ways back, where we were talking about kind of their virtual brand at Buffalo Wings and Rings. But Thomas and I today are really here to talk about developing a brand and developing a brand from an international perspective. But before we jump into that, Thomas, why don't you give our listeners a little bit of a background on you? Where did you come from? And then we can talk a little bit about Buffalo Wings and Rings.
Sure. Happy to share. As you mentioned, Chief Development Officer for Buffalo Wings and Rings. I've been here for about a year and a half, but quite a bit of franchising experience. Overall, I was with Papa John's for almost 15 years and put Papa John's in a lot of international markets around the world. I also spent about almost 10 years at P&G's franchising business called Agile Pursuits Franchising, and we did the Tide Dry Cleaners and Mr. Clean Car Wash brands. So I had quite a bit of international experience with Papa John's, which was helpful coming into the role here at Buffalo Wings and Rings and helping them to go expand internationally.
Well, for those listeners out there that might not be familiar with your brand, because you guys are right now still a relatively regional brand, I believe. And so
right. For
those that aren't familiar with the brand, why don't you tell us a little bit about the brand, and then we can talk about kind of your guys' both national and international expansion plans.
Yeah, absolutely. We, as you mentioned, are largely regional. We're mostly in kind of the Midwest, the South, Texas, Florida. But we have about 85 locations globally, 64 of which are in the U.S., 21 internationally already in the Middle East and Europe. But the brand is, people often liken us to a Buffalo Wild Wings. Obviously, names are similar, but we really look at a premium positioning in terms of the food and the quality of the food. So really what we stand for is a chef-inspired menu. So really good sports restaurant and bar food, not just a sports restaurant and bar or sports bar. So that chef-inspired menu really drives us. And we have a chef here that literally is working on R&D all of the time for either improving our existing menu items or creating new menu items or limited time offers. Obviously, crave-worthy wings and rings, it's in the name. But we want to have kind of above and beyond the expectation for the quality of the chicken and the meals that we create. VIP service is kind of the third pillar. So kind of think about going to, whether it's a soccer game or an NFL game or a Major League Baseball game, you've got the seats in the stand, and then you've got kind of your VIP seating. So we really look at kind of elevating the experience to make the restaurant look great and kind of that box feel. But also elevate the service. So it's very important to us. And then kind of fourth pillar is open to all fans. So we're big about making connections. So whether you're there for a sporting event or you're just there to hang out with friends or family, we really want to be open to all fans and kind of inclusive overall as an organization.
I love that. And I will admit that after my conversation with William, although I didn't necessarily have your guys' wings, I did partake in some wing activity for myself, because I was craving some of the flavors that he threw out. I love that you guys have really focused on kind of that unique aspect, because I think all too often people consider just kind of the standard buffalo wings. The way that you consume wings is, do you get the mild, medium, or hot, you know, or the blow right. your face off hot, you know, versus where you guys have gone. Do you feel like, Thomas, from that perspective, that's been a big differentiator even for your domestic growth of the brand and how you guys have done that? Is that has that been a true driving factor, is creating some of those unique guest experiences and some of those unique flavor profiles that you might not be able to get anywhere else?
Absolutely. I would say it's one of our biggest points of differentiation from everyone else. Again, when you kind of throw sports bar or sports restaurant and bar out there, people have an image in their mind of kind of exactly what that sounds and feels like. So elevating that experience, whether it's from the service or from the menu, has definitely been a differentiator. And people tell us all the time, whether they're customers and guests in the store or they're prospective franchisees looking at the brand, you know, they go visit other locations of competitors, and then they come visit us and they're like, wow, the food is really, really good and really better than what you typically see out there. So yes, definitely a differentiator.
Well, thank you for that. So you brought up the idea of franchising, I believe, you know, you alluded to probably your biggest competitor or your biggest big brother in Buffalo Wild Wings. I think they're all primarily franchise as well. Of the 64 domestic stores, are they primarily franchise, some corporate, some franchise? Talk to me a little bit about the mix and where you guys are going, because it'll really kind of form some of the conversations as we're talking about the international expansion.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have four traditional locations, and I'll talk a little bit about what traditional and non-traditional are, but it's pretty intuitive. Four traditional locations, and we're actually working on our fifth. All of our locations are located in kind of greater Cincinnati, which includes Northern Kentucky. So we're getting ready to open our fifth traditional corporate location out of the 64 that I mentioned in the U.S. Four of those in the U.S. are what we call non-traditional locations. So appropriately, in our case, think about sports venues. Those would be non-traditional. So if you're in an airport or a large theme park or college, university campus or a sports stadium, that's kind of non-traditional development. So we're located in FC Cincinnati's new stadium, which is amazing, by the way, if you haven't visited. The Cincinnati Reds stadium, the University of Cincinnati basketball stadium, and then the Cincinnati Bengals stadium. So we have four non-traditional units and currently four traditional units for a total of eight. And then, like I said, a fifth traditional location is on the way.
Wonderful. Before we get too deep into the recording for today, I wanted to remind you guys of one of the partners that was on the show back in April. The founder of Pop Menu, Brennan, came on and we were talking about reputation management and really managing your online presence. And I know for myself, one of the things that I always look for before I'm going out to a new restaurant or to any restaurant for that matter is kind of where they're at from a presence perspective. What does their menu look like on the web? And so the guys at Pop Menu have done a fantastic job of really managing their way through that. And so if you guys haven't already checked out the podcast that dropped back in April, go check it out. And they partnered with us on the podcast to offer $100 off of your first month if you go to popmenu.com/tech guys and check their stuff out. Great company, great product, and I would recommend anybody take a look at it. And so in those non-traditional locations, have you guys done them as franchisees or done them as licensees where you guys will get an HMS host or an Aramark or something like that to run it, and they produce your guys' product?
It's usually the latter, yeah. A lot of the non-traditional operations have that be the case, whether it's, again, airports or large theme parks or stadiums.
That was kind of my assumption, and part of why I bring that up, I think, is a lot of times many restaurateurs, especially some of the independents, don't understand that when I'm going to a California Pizza Kitchen at LAX Airport, it's not really run by California Pizza Kitchen. It's run by HMS Host or Aramark or somebody else that's running that. It might be the product that you guys have produced, or TGI Fridays or PF Chang's. And so that's the whole licensee model. And then as far as the traditional locations that are in a shopping mall and those kind of spaces, are those primarily franchise or, you know, a mix of both? Talk to me a little bit about that.
So they are mostly franchised, as I mentioned, out of the 60 traditional locations we have, four of those are corporate. And then the rest of those are franchised, and they're kind of a mix of freestanding buildings where it's just a Buffalo Wings and Rings location, or strip center locations where we might be like a nicely imaged end cap on a strip center.
Okay, perfect. So that's kind of been your guys' domestic growth, and it sounds like you guys are going to continue that path of the domestic growth. Talk to me a little bit about how and why international from your guys' brand. Was it a push? Was it a pull? You know, did somebody from Mexico come and say, I love your guys' brand, I really want to bring it here? Did you guys go into the franchising space, into the licensee space, to say, we want to go international? Talk to me a little bit about that. Not just the decision to go international, but a little bit of the blocking and tackling of how you got to that space of not only considering it, and then we'll talk a little bit more in depth of some of the things that you guys have learned as you guys have been going down that path.
Sure. Yeah. And it's kind of a loaded question. Three of the owners, there are three owners of Buffalo Wings and Rings, and one of those owners decided to move back to Jordan. So he decided to start kind of a corporate headquarters and start growing the brand in that region. So we have 21 locations that are in the Middle East and Europe. So that decision was made a number of years ago, because of more personal reasons and wanting to move to Jordan and continue to expand the brand. On the U.S. side, your question is great, because every franchise should consider this question very carefully. I jokingly say, and quasi-jokingly say, and have for years, that there's strategic growth, right? We say we want to go to this market and that market and this other market, all that are, you know, contiguous and better to service from corporate headquarters and better for the franchisees because of purchasing, logistics, distribution of food and paper products, et cetera. And then there's opportunistic growth, which says, you know, we're going to go wherever people want to go, right? They inquire with us and we decide to go there for that reason. So I say that the kind of right blend for us is strategically opportunistic, right? So a bit of a hybrid of both of them. Okay. We have our strategic markets where it makes sense. And that is to say, I mentioned we're mostly in kind of the Midwest and Texas and Florida. We want to continue to operate in the DMAs, or designated marketing areas, in which we're already operating. So think of like Greater Cincinnati as a DMA. It makes sense for us to have as many stores in that DMA as possible, because it's, again, better for the franchisee. It's better for us. It's better for exposure. It's better for support and distribution of products, et cetera. So with Mexico in mind, we did not have part of our long-term strategic plan going to Mexico originally. And I mentioned I've been here for about a year and a half, but they've been talking to this organization for a couple of years. So they contacted us. They had experienced a lot of our locations in Texas and decided they wanted to do Buffalo Wings and Rings in Mexico. Now, they are also an operator of other franchise brands. So, as I say, that's a very loaded question, something franchisors should take very seriously. You should consider the kind of the business acumen and experience of your prospective franchisee is one of the most important things, right? Is it a good relationship match? So they also have Carl's Jr., Pizza Hut, KFC, IHOP, right, a number of American brands. So they're familiar with franchising, have kind of the infrastructure for operations, marketing, and the rest of the business. So this is really adding on another brand to a very solid foundation. Now, also, we're right across the border. I'm actually going down there next week, but we're in Reynosa, Mexico, is where we're going to open our first location, and they're going to open locations throughout Mexico, but kind of starting in that northern Mexico region. So if you look at a map of Hidalgo, Texas, is literally right across the border from Reynosa, so it's only a few miles away from the border where we're going to open our first location. So there's a lot of efficiencies that we can gain there, plus there's a lot of exposure for people that either go across the border regularly for work or travel. But a lot of people in northern Mexico are already familiar with Buffalo Wings and Rings. So it makes a lot of sense for us, because we already have exposure there. We have brand awareness there. The marketing will make sense. It's easier for us to support, obviously, northern Mexico than it was if we were deciding to go to China or Chile, right, that are geographically much farther away. it makes sense from a distribution standpoint because we can get a lot of things either locally or regionally there or transport things across the border from Texas. So it just makes a lot of sense for us for going right across the border where we already have exposure and it's easier to support.
Well, and I think you said it as part of your description that you guys, the some of your guys' brands are kind of in that southern Texas region right across
right.
You know, on the U.S. side. So, you know, I live in Southern California and close enough to Tijuana. So we've got a lot of people that are back to San Diego. So you get a lot of that same transition. Whereas if you were open in a Mexico City or you were open in Sinaloa, it might be a little bit different because you've got to build a brand down there. And was that, you talked about it being opportunistic, Thomas, but was that kind of opportunistic / strategic that says instead of going into Mexico City or instead of going into, you know, somewhere farther down south that you suggested that they stay kind of in that place? Or was that kind of where the franchisor was at as far as what they thought made sense for their, you know, their brands? And, you know, because you say that that the people you've partnered with already kind of have a bunch of U.S. brands. Are they focused on that kind of northern region of Mexico right on the border, or do they have, you know, spaces all over and they just chose to pick that region? Tell me a little bit about that decision-making process, because I think, again, the idea is I want to educate people, because there's other people that are sitting in your guys' shoes and I'd love for them to glean from you and from what you guys have done to help better understand that.
Right. So back to the point of being strategically opportunistic, we wouldn't have been as opportunistic if they were in Mexico City or farther south, right, in Chile or somewhere farther away. Luckily, their headquarters are literally in Reynosa. So that's where they're based. Now, they have operations with their other brands. And by the way, they have a retail chain of gas stations as well as the restaurant businesses they have. So they operate all over Mexico, but they're headquartered in Reynosa, literally right across the border. So that was a big, big, big factor for us of where they were located. And again, strategically opportunistic doesn't mean that you're just opportunistic. It's still part of your strategy. It's just a little bit outside of your, you know, footprint geographically. So while this is a foreign country and that comes with a host of challenges, typically when a franchisor is thinking about going internationally, it's much more viable going right across the border than it is to go to, you know, an entirely new country in a different hemisphere.
Well, and ironically, I got the privilege 9 years ago with one of our clients to go internationally into the Middle East. And it happens to be a concept. I mean, you guys will know the concept, the Cheesecake Factory, they had to change many of their recipes even for both alcohol and pork to change the recipes going into the Middle East, because in certain countries they weren't allowed to bring in the products that they might have domestically. And so talk to me a little bit about, you know, you talk about it being strategically opportunistic. It's great that it's so close, and so you guys are going to be able to cut your teeth on that international side without a founder being in the Middle East, like you talked about earlier. What are some of the things you guys have considered from a build out of the restaurant? You know, did you guys keep the same footprint? Does it look just like the ones in South Texas? Is it different, you know, from a footprint, from a look and feel perspective of the atmosphere within the restaurant before we dig into the food and technology and some of those other things that that you guys might have also had to consider?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that's part of the filter as you go through that decision of being strategically opportunistic, or what even would be strategic. Strategic means, you know, you do Occam's razor, right? The simplest solution is the best one. So if you can do things exactly like you do them in the U.S., that's optimal. Now, with international markets, and again, I've got a lot of experience with different countries and continents with Papa John's. Some markets, Papa John's is 100% the same as it is in the U.S., and some international markets, it's vastly changed the footprint and the menu in the Middle East, for example, or other markets, China, where they have full service. It's more like a macaroni grill with an expanded menu and full service. You're not used to seeing that in the U.S. So for us, the part of that decision making process and what was effective and efficient for us is we and the franchisee there, importantly, both said that we'd like to do largely the same as what we do in the U.S. So visually, to your point about the design, it will look similar to our new prototype design here in the U.S., almost exactly the same. And the menu will be, call it 95% the same as the U.S. Now, we do want to be flexible, and I think it's a very important cultural sensitivity that you show that you're willing to be flexible, not only with the franchisee, but with the guests. If there are strong preferences for a certain item or a certain flavor profile of dipping sauces and things like that, then we should be open-minded to that. So we are doing some things that are a little bit of a variation for what we do here in the U.S., but it's mostly the same, and that was a big part of the decision-making process for us.
Well, it reminds me, so I've had the privilege of serving with our church down in Mexico quite a bit, and and we tell the story where we would come down and grill hamburgers and hot dogs, and the condiments that we have as Americans on hamburgers and hot dogs. Ultimately, we would come back with, you know, full things of ketchup and mustard and relish, because they didn't eat those items, those condiments.
Exactly. And
we tell a very true story. Have you guys found a differential between your menu, like, penetration and the items that are ordered in your South Texas region versus the stuff that's up farther in kind of that Ohio region? You know, do you find that their buying patterns are different since I'm guessing some percentage of your consumers are coming across the border down in those Southern Mexican stores or Southern American stores down in Texas? Do you find that your guys' menu patterns are vastly different, or are they pretty much close to the same? You know, you talked about 95% of your menu. And quite frankly, at that same time, did you find some of that same thing talking Papa John's when you went down to Mexico with Papa John's? Did you find that it was relatively the same, or was there pretty big swings in anything that might have surprised you from what your guys' initial thoughts were on it?
Yeah, I think there is always a surprise. And I was going to say, for the perfect answer to your question, get back with me in 12 months. we're going to open our first store actually in September, October, so pretty soon. Now, we expect, and with any brand, there should be variations, right? There are different demographic profiles, meaning household incomes and patterns of eating and purchasing are a little bit different, and traffic patterns, population densities, right? They're different. So you need to consider the real estate site as well as kind of the culture of the broader city, state, and then, of course, country, because you want to get down to the local level. But yeah, I think there invariably are going to be surprises. I think there will be significant changes in kind of the menu preferences and maybe even business hours, but we think it will largely be similar to what we see here in the U.S. The great thing about our specific partner, again, and like I said, that's the most important decision you make going internationally, is who is your partner that you're working with as the franchisee, knowing that they've already done this with Kentucky Fried Chicken or KFC, IHOP, Pizza Hut, Carl's Jr. They have experience in kind of translating, number one, a brand, how American brand is translated in Mexico, literally, language-wise, but also experientially. So they've done this with a number of brands, too. And a lot of their brands are operating very, very, very similarly to how they do in the U.S. So I think we'll see. Our expectations are broad enough to expect some unexpected surprises. But we think there's enough similarity to the South Texas locations. And to your point, we've got about a dozen locations in Texas. We think there's enough similarity where it will be similar, but not exactly the same.
Got you. Wonderful. Well, and you brought up the whole translation idea. What have you guys done as far as your franchise agreement and even translating your recipes, your supply chain, all of those kind of things? Because at least from some of the clients that we've had, you know, and maybe you guys are fortunate because it's right across the border, but even your supply chain to your recipes, to your training manuals, to all of those things, have you guys just worked with the franchisee to allow them some level of latitude to be able to translate them themselves? Did you guys take that burden on as the franchisor when you guys went into those spaces? Talk to me a little bit about even just the language side of things, because, you know, they speak Spanish there and we speak English here. And that's just, I mean, that's a burden that you've got to overcome at some point.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting, even down to the translation of the name, and not just the literal translation, but how it comes across in China may be different from Mexico, may be different from Europe, for example. So the translation, again, this company has done it a number of times with other brands, so they are largely taking the onus and the responsibility of having those materials translated. Obviously, where we work with them to spot check and make sure that those things are translating. Number one, our standards, but number two, just make sure that the meaning gets across. Sometimes in translation, like I said, you lose kind of the context of what you're talking about because we're focusing more on the literal translation. So we want to make sure that the experience and what we're trying to get across with that chef inspired menu and the elevated service experience and those kinds of things translate as well. But they're largely taking control of the translation, and then we work together to firm those up and make sure that they're in accordance with our standards.
I love that. And again, there's so much contextually, as I said, going down to Mexico and serving with their church for the last 10 plus years.
You
find out things that you didn't ever know. And as you just get closer to them, it changes your paradigm of what you thought you knew until you got there.
I was just going to say, and sometimes expecting the unexpected is the most important thing, right? Going into this with a good intent, with a good partner, we know that we're going to do a lot of things very well, and we know that we're going to experiment and test through some things that kind of learn as we go on some things, and just having that positive attitude about that. As I like to say, you can either focus on the problems or focus on the solutions. You have to know what the problems are to get good solutions, but let's focus the energy on being collaborative and getting to good, strong solutions.
Yeah, no, and we talk about it often when we lead trips down there. It's like you've got to be flexible because you don't know what's going to come about. And so, it'll be interesting to watch your guys's opportunities. Today's episode is brought to you by the team over at Seven Shifts. You guys may recognize that name because I had their founder on the show in July talking about the inception of what it is that they do related to labor management and staff management and scheduling. Great guy, great origin story related to growing up in the restaurants and solving a real problem for his family's business. You may also recognize their name because they were recently in the news because they just took a $20 million round of funding from the Union Square Hospitality Group, which those unfamiliar, it's Danny Myers out of New York City, his group that committed to work with the Seven Shifts team and help fund their continued growth. For listeners of the podcast, you guys can check out the software for free for 90 days by going to sevenshifts.com/restaurant-technology-guys, and they would love to talk with you. Great restaurant people, great technologists, and a really great product. What are the things? I mean, we are on the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. Talk to me a little bit about evaluating the technology stack. Did you guys just partner with this franchisee to just say, what are you guys using elsewhere? Or is there something unique about what you guys are doing, whether it's guest loyalty, gift cards, so many of those different things that you might do here domestically that you either do or don't decide to translate to across the border? Talk to me a little bit about that decision-making process and kind of the tech stack that you guys might have either chosen to put down there or allowed them to, allowed them to do those things. And maybe you don't do the LTOs, you don't do the coupons, you don't do the loyalty, you don't do any of that stuff different across the border. Talk to me a little bit about that decision-making.
You've definitely done this before because all the right questions, you have to think about it philosophically first and see if you're aligned kind of philosophically, and then you get down to the kind of more practical, pragmatic solutions. So similar to the design of the store and the operation and the menu that I mentioned, we're largely the same as the U.S. That would be optimal from a technology perspective as well. But there are challenges. We have a new prototype design that has a new point of sale system in the U.S. Buffalo Wings and Rings that we haven't even rolled out to all of our stores here yet. So the good news is the point of sale system that we're currently using, they use a version of that same point of sale system in some of their other locations for the other brands. So they're familiar with that, which helps a lot. But then you think about things that in the U.S., our new prototype design, whether it's regarding the app or third-party delivery services and things like that, we want to optimize all of those things, not only because we've been going through a global pandemic for the last kind of year and a quarter, but because we wanted to do that anyway, meaning have great guest experience and service and convenience for the guests, but also emphasize the ability to take things to go or to have them delivered to your home. Those things aren't as popular yet in Mexico, and certainly northern Mexico, where we're talking about going right now. So we've been doing a lot of evaluation of kind of baby steps. Let's get the most important chunks done now that relate to how you can operate your business effectively in Mexico. And then let's kind of evolve over time when it comes to some of the new technological aspects. But we're working through that right now, actually. The POS system, obviously, we know what we're going to do, but we're working through kind of how we can most effectively implement third-party delivery services and to-go orders and an app and things like that that aren't as popular yet in Mexico. So it's really important, obviously, the question from the beginning, because as we said, when you're thinking about going international, philosophically, you think, how do you want to be perceived as a brand? And then how do you execute on achieving that? So we're going through that process right now, and we have a good jumping off point, but I believe strongly that it will be something that evolves over time. They may not have gift cards, to your point, day one, but that's something we definitely want to get to.
Yep. Well, and I think, again, sorry to cut you off, but I think that's something that all brands need to understand is don't make assumptions when you're going international that just the same things are going to translate. You know, you guys have discovered that you know, and again, you've been doing this for a while now in your career, third-party delivery and you know, the DoorDash might not even exist in Mexico. I mean, I don't know if they do or not, but like you make this assumption that DoorDash, well, they might have their own version of DoorDash down there. Go figure out what that is before you go jumping into assumptions. So sorry, I'll let you finish that piece that you were saying.
No, that's perfect. I was just going to say that above and beyond that, in some international markets, you have to do an evaluation of what POS and technological capabilities are even possible. Mm. Meaning if a brand uses XYZ POS and app technology in the U.S. and they want to go open a store and pick a country, there are other limitations on IP requirements, regulatory registration requirements, or just the inability overall to use it. So you may have to just scrap what you're doing currently and decide in whatever market you're going to, what is the POS system that's available and what is the app technology that's available and how do we most closely mimic what we're doing in the U.S. in that country. So you really, again, have to be open-minded and kind of expect the unexpected, but really puts the emphasis on doing your research upfront and understanding what you have the ability to do rather than making assumptions that you can kind of do everything that you do in the U.S.
Well, and I love that you guys have partnered with somebody down there that kind of already had walked the walk. And so it made your guys' burden of onboarding that thing. We happen to work with a group in Mexico as well. And there was a law change related to how a guest receipt needed to show up. And, you know, we've got another concept in Montreal, and you've got to translate everything to French. And, you know, so across the board, and again, I'm sure you've lived this life for so many years that you've got to be both. You got to make sure that what you pick to begin with is compliant with what the local laws are. And then you've got to rely on your partner to share those law changes so that you can work with the partner to make sure, you know, the POS partner and the technology partner to make sure that you guys comply with those things, whether it's minimum delivery charges or it's printing on the guest check the receipt number. I mean, we launched a brand in Puerto Rico and they have this lotto thing that you've got to connect to their lottery number and print it on the receipts so that the lotto, you know, and it's like, I had no idea until you got to Puerto Rico that you had this lottery system and it needed to print on every receipt. You probably chuckle under your breath because you've lived this life for so long. But until you do it, you don't know those things. You don't know that that's where that these are the laws that have come up with. And they have good reason for them. But we as Americans and we in our lives every day don't come across those.
Right. I mean, seem like a small thing, but very important to the franchisee and the franchisor is payment of royalties, for example.
Yep.
So doing an assessment of what the currency translation, how you're going to do that, making sure that the currency translates and repatriation of royalties back to the U.S., how that occurs. All those details really need to be isolated and studied and determine the best route forward.
Yeah, well, and even one that I didn't consider is exchange rates. And what are you guys doing for royalties with exchange rates? If the peso goes way up or way down, does that change your guys' exchange rate? Do you guys have how did you guys deal with that on the royalty side? Do you guys have like a fixed number? Do you guys reevaluate every 30 days?
Yeah, so it's kind of sharing the risk, if you will, meaning to your point, different markets and currencies fluctuate around the world. So understanding our valuation is done at one point. So think about weekly, monthly, quarterly, annually, right? The valuation on the currency at a certain point is done. And then the amount of sales, a percentage of the amount of sales that are done is remitted to the U.S. At that point. So you're always kind of a snapshot in time, meaning that's why I say we're kind of spreading the risk. And sometimes it may be that the purchasing of U.S. dollars to send to us may be more expensive. And sometimes it may be the purchasing is much better and more favorable. So you kind of share that risk. But that's part of, you know, the wonderful world of arbitrage and global commerce. You know, we constantly have to make sure that we're keeping an eye on that and understanding what the challenges are. But it's a good system.
I thanks for sharing some of that insight, Thomas. Sure. So let's talk about, we've got a few more minutes before we wrap up. Talk to me about where you guys are going. You know, you talked about the strategically opportunistic in Mexico. What's your guys' plans for Mexico? Are you guys looking to get to the same size you guys are in the States, bigger, smaller? You know, if all things go well this fall, when you guys launch this new store, what are you guys thinking? How do you guys think that this is going to go? And are you guys in a place where even other strategically opportunistic, whether it's in Canada or somewhere else overseas, that you guys might also consider growth outside of just Mexico on an international level?
Yeah, it's a great question. We talk about being strategic, and we still want to be largely strategic in our approach. So the more times you make an opportunistic or a strategically strategically opportunistic decision, the more you're kind of decaying from your original strategy. So we've said that we've made an exception and kind of are being strategically opportunistic on this. So we want to make sure we launch Mexico with excellence is kind of my broader sweeping mission. It's not that we're ready to go to other states in Mexico or we're ready to go to other countries and just kind of the zest for growth, for the spirit of growth. We want quality growth, and we want this to make sense for the franchisees. We spend an exorbitant amount of time making sure that the unit economics make sense for the franchisee and the franchisor. But, you know, we really look at things with a wallet on the table mentality, as I call it, meaning that if we were the franchisee in Mexico or any market, how would we feel about the investment, right? So is the initial investment good, and is it relative to what you're expecting to do in revenue? How is your sales to investment ratio? How long is it going to take to get profitable? So we're thinking about all of those things. So that's a long way to say to your question, we really want to launch Mexico with excellence. We want to open a few stores here and get the solid foundation built before we consider a lot of other expansion into Mexico. So they initially signed up to do 11 stores, and that sounds like a random number. But as you can imagine, we do assessments of how many stores each market will support. So they're starting off with three kind of northern Mexican states in Mexico, Tamaulipas, Nuevo León, and Coahuila, Mexico. And then once they have locations built in those areas, or as we start to get more locations open, their expectation is they want to continue to grow throughout other areas of Mexico. It certainly makes sense for us to grow together with a great partner. So our expectation would be the same. So we're not dying to go sign other international markets or even other areas of Mexico. We want to launch with excellence with a great partner and kind of grow together. It's more efficient and effective for both of us.
Well, thank you for that. And it'll be exciting to see how the brand translates and kind of what your guys' learnings are. It'd be fun to follow up in 6 or 12 months after you guys are open and have a little bit of, you know, miles on the odometer to see what it looks like.
That would be great.
What other things did we miss that you would want other restaurateurs that are considering going international, and or even other franchisors and or franchisees that might either consider your guys' brand or others that are thinking about going down this path that we've missed that they can glean some knowledge and some wisdom from your years of experience in doing it in the past?
Yeah, I think that philosophical and kind of strategic question I would just reemphasize, because it really applies to every area of the business. So thinking about what's right for you, everybody kind of has visions of grandeur, if not delusions of grandeur, but certainly visions of grandeur that, wow, you hear about, you know, China is a huge market and we could do 1 million stores there. Obviously, I've tried 1,000 times to stop exaggerating. But, you know, you could do a lot of stores in big markets. But really think about the impact to you and your organization. Mm-hmm. Very importantly, and it sounds silly, but will your brand work in a foreign market, right? Are people receptive to your whatever it is that you're offering from a retail or service perspective is the most important question. Then get down to that root cause and kind of financial analysis of what does it look like? Let's make some assumptions and understand what it could look like economically for the franchisor and the franchisee. I often say if the things work at the unit level economic point, then they'll work at the macro economic point. So if each unit performs well, then the group as a whole and the system as a whole will perform well. But there's so many questions you need to ask. How do you think about real estate demographics that we were talking about earlier? So developing kind of most brands in the U.S. know what their demographic profile and what kind of an quote ideal location looks like. But that's much different when you go to Mexico or any other foreign market. So understanding does your brand work, but then also what makes a good location? You know, construction challenges. Think about building materials costs. We've heard a lot about inflation and spiking costs. Think about what those costs are for the international market. And are there things that you're having to ship from the U.S. or are you able to source things locally or regionally from an operations training perspective? Do they have the experience and how are you translating materials not only to be used in the stores of whatever your brand is, but how are you training the team that's going to operate those, making sure that that translation is performed well from an IT perspective? I think we talked a pretty good level there from a marketing and social media. How does that translate? Again, what is the audience? Are they similar to the U.S. audience where they're kind of, they get it minute one, what your brand is and what you stand for? Or you're going to have to educate them of who you are and what you are. I mean, when we first started doing Papa John's in China, for example, pizza was not even a popular thing, much less pizza delivery. So that's why we did more dine-in and expanded menu to start. And then we grew to do more delivery restaurants after that, after you kind of get people educated to who you are. But all those financial considerations I mentioned, not just from the initial when you're doing financial modeling of how it might look for the franchisee and the franchisor, but how you're going to repatriate royalties and how you think about currency conversions, things like that. So there are really a lot of things to consider as you're starting that initial analysis on going international. And then it's what market internationally and how far geographically, how are you going to support that group?
Well, and the other thing that I heard you say quite a bit during during our conversation today, Thomas, is really just picking the right partner to go internationally with. Right. You know, don't be so foolish to think that you can go and do it all yourself without, even if you're trying to build it internationally without a partner, make sure that you find somebody that's on, you know, on that other country's side to get you educated. You know, you right. guys have been privileged enough to have this partner that that already knows how to do this and has already translated a bunch of US brands. But if you don't go that route, which we've had some customers say, oh, you know, we know what we're doing. You know, I've been to Mexico a bunch of times. I'm just going to go open some restaurants down there, which is right. fine. It's a fine approach. Just understand that you're going to be kicked in the teeth a number of times while right. you're starting to learn and starting to understand what it is that you guys do down there.
Yeah, it's all down to what your risk tolerance is and how to decrease or mitigate some of those risks. I've met many franchisees, by the way, that had no other franchising experience that performed brilliantly. So mm-hmm. by no means is that a stretch. It's just a matter of if you had that person or this group that I'm talking about in Mexico, which one has the higher probability of success, right? So it's risk profiling. It's not to say that you can't do one or the other. It's just what are the risks associated with your choices.
Well, I appreciate all of that. You gave really kind of a masterclass in about 3 minutes of all of the things that you need to consider. How would our audience get in touch with your guys' brand, with what you guys do, with you? If they wanted to learn a little bit more, either on franchising your guys' group or even gleaning some additional wisdom from you and what you guys have already done there, Thomas?
Yeah, they can reach our website, obviously, buffalowingsandrings.com. We've got a franchising website that's separate called ownabuffalo.com. So they can learn more and they can contact me and our team directly at either of those. We've got a lot of exciting growth in the U.S. as well as international, and a lot of our existing franchisees even signing up to do more development, which is always a testament to the courage and the faith in the brand kind of a thing. But I'm happy personally to connect with anybody that would like to communicate more about this. And I'd love to, as you recommended earlier, to catch up and do a where are they now 12 months from now.
I would love to. Well, thank you very much for your time. Thomas, I know that this is going to resonate really well with our audience, just getting to hear what it is that you guys do, how you guys are doing it, the things that you guys have learned. And quite frankly, it'll be even more, probably more fun 6, 9, 12 months from now when we talk about the things that you didn't even anticipate that that caught you on the backside, even with as much experience as you have. And so thank you for spending the time. To our audience, guys, we know that you guys have got thousands and tens of thousands of different podcasts you guys can listen to each and every week. So we count it as a privilege that you guys come and hang out with us and learn and give us some feedback about what things that are going on with the podcast. So thank you guys for spending your time with us this week. If you guys haven't already done so, please do us a favor and go rate the podcast on the favorite podcast player. It helps others get aware of what we're doing here. While you're online, go also subscribe to our once a month newsletter. Once a month, we send you out all of the podcasts and blog posts that we've had. No spam, no selling your list. It's really just to kind of keep you guys informed so that if you guys miss one of the fantastic episodes that we have, like the one today with Thomas. Thomas, thank you again. And to our audience, make it a great day.
You're quite welcome. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. Visit restauranttechnologyguys.com for tips, industry insights, and more to help you run your restaurant better.